air is cleaner, the tree all blurry lights. The kids don't seem so greedy, the presents not all crap. The food is ready sooner, and then I take a nap. Since the warmest time of year, your Christmas whiskey means good cheer. A woozy smile from ear to ear with your Christmas whiskey. Your Christmas whiskey. Your Christmas whiskey. Time is near.
All right, so a little bit of a Christmas track there for you all, getting us into the season now that it is officially December. I'm Katie Fitzpatrick. Welcome to Arts Express here on CITR 101.9. We have a good show for you today. We're going to be doing a review of the new Bob Dylan biopic, I'm Not There. And we're also going to be doing a review of the new play at the Fire Hall Arts Center, which is called Rita Joe. And I'm going to be giving you guys an interview with Cedar Carboni and Bonnie Niche, which are part of a Vancouver arts group called Pandora's Collective. So to start off today, I think I'm going to do the review of the new Bob Dylan movie, which I had a chance to check out last night. So this is obviously a Bob Dylan biography movie, in other words, called a biopic. It's also unlike any other, though, because it casts six different actors in the lead. So Cate Blanchett does the gender switch in her portrayal of Bob Dylan and stands out as the star. Although Christian Bale and Heath Ledger also deliver strong performances. Richard Gere and the wonderful Marcos Carl Franklin, who assumed the part of the tall tale Dylan, they add yet another dimension to his character. The switching of actors seems to convey the complexity and confusion of life, and of this man's life in particular. In addition, the fact that the movie is based on a combination of real, false, imagined, and exaggerated stories reflects the tone of Dylan's own lyrics and gives a sense of what it is to talk and be talked about. Supporting characters are also strong, with Sarah Lowndes playing the famous Charlotte Gainsbourg. Overall, the sheer number of actors and plot lines causes the film to balloon in length, and some scenes certainly feel unnecessary. Nonetheless, I feel the director and co-writer Todd Haynes should certainly be congratulated on this creative and ambitious project, along with all of the actors involved. If you would like to check it out, I'm Not There is currently showing at Fifth Avenue Cinemas, and you can check out times at festivalcinemas.ca, which is actually a really great website. Gives you the listings for all the movies at the more alternative theaters here in Vancouver. Now, next up, I'm going to give you guys a few listings so you know what's going on in theater, dance, and music. In theater, there's How the Other Half Loves, Alan Ackburn's comedy about marital misunderstandings, starring Nancy Ebert, Mark Ash, Paul Kloegman, Jenny Mitchell, Tierney Ness, and Simon Roberts. That is till December 8th at the Presentation House Theater in North Vancouver. There's also Richard III, William Shakespeare's tragedy about a prince with an unbridled lust for power, directed by Scott Bellis and starring Bob Fraser and the students of Studio 58. That is till December 9th at Studio 58 at Langara College. And actually, Bob Fraser also did a collaboration with UBC students last year in The Life After God, so if you liked him in that play, you might want to check this one out as well. Another show currently on is A Moon for the Misbegotten. United Players presents Eugene O'Neill's love story set on a farm in 1920s Connecticut. That is till December 9th at the Jericho Arts Center at 1675 Discovery. And I recently saw a really terrific play there, which was The American Pilot, so hopefully the streak will continue there at the Jericho Arts Center. Now, another one is The Ecstasy of Rita Joe, which, as I mentioned, I'm going to be reviewing near the end of the show. This is a play by Canadian playwright George Riga, and it's about an Aboriginal woman who moves to the city and finds herself caught between two cultures. It's starring William B. Davis, Lisa Ravensbergen, Kevin Lorang, Byron Chief Moon, and others, and it's showing till December 8th at the Fire Hall Arts Center in East Cordova. Now, also in dance right now, there's something called Baseline. Edom presents an improvised performance with American dance artist Nancy Stark Smith and Edom's artistic director, Peter Bingham. That is December 7th to 8th at 8 p.m. at the Edom Studio Theater, which is on East 8th. In music at the moment, there's the St. Lawrence String Quartet. Pianist Stephen Prutzman joins the acclaimed Canadian ensemble in a live musical accompaniment to a screening of Buster Keaton's silent film, Sherlock Jr. That is December 4th to 7th at 10 a.m. at the Vancouver Academy of Music. So that's starting today and going on for a few more days. And the Academy of Music is at 1270 Chestnut. Now, we were talking a little bit earlier about the Bob Dylan movie. So, of course, I couldn't go on without playing something by Bob Dylan. So here's something off the album Good As I've Been to You. And this is a song called Little Maggie. And when we come back, we'll be airing the interview with Pandora's Collective.
Where is little Maggie? Over yonder she stands, rifle on her shoulder, six-shooter in her hand. How can I ever stand it just to see them two blue eyes shining like some diamond in the sky? Rather be in some lonely holler where the sun don't ever shine than to see be another man's darling and to know that you'll never be mine. March me away to the station with my suitcase in my hand. Yes, march me away to the station. I'm off to some far distant land. Sometimes I have a nickel and sometimes I have a dime. Sometimes I have $10 just to pay little Maggie's rent. Pretty flowers are made for blooming. Pretty stars are made to shine. Pretty girls are made for boys now. Little Maggie was made for
Right, so that was Little Maggie by Bob Dylan in tribute to the new film I'm Not There, currently showing at Fifth Avenue, which, as I mentioned earlier, is definitely worth checking out. If a bit long, still definitely creative and fairly ambitious. So up next, I have an interview with Cedar Carboni and Bonnie Niche, who are part of a group called Pandora's Collective that helps to promote the arts here in Vancouver. And they're also poets themselves, and they focus a lot on that in their work, and they're going to be reading a little bit of poetry. So I had a chance to talk with them a couple days ago, and I'm just going to air the interview for you guys right here on CITR 101.9.
Doing today?
Wonderful, thank you. Pleased to be here, of course.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Oh, no problems. Do you guys want to tell us a little bit about what Pandora's Collective does?
Sure. We are a charitable outreach organization. We do a lot of different things in the literary arts community. everything from we go into drug rehab centers and do workshops, and we work with street youth. We go into schools, and we have a big festival every year, the Summer Dream Literary Arts Festival, that showcases all the ongoing events that happen every month. We bring them all together for a full-day free festival. So people, and it's usually in Stanley Park the third Saturday in July, so you can look for that.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have awards programming as well. We have contests and scholarships. We have our community programming, which is there's four events that we host every month, as well as a bunch of other there's a bunch of other opportunities for people to read. Like Bonnie said, there's the Summer Dream Literary Arts Festival. We also have resources and services on our website, our outreach work. Bonnie mentioned Covenant House, and there's some drug and alcohol rehabilitation centers, some other places like that, inner city schools. But we also send supplies to Zimbabwe, help them build libraries, and help them. We have a Looney backpack drive, which Bonnie started. And so there's all sorts of things that
so
we're working
on. Education with that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, that's really interesting. And why did you choose the name Pandora's Collective?
Well, we were looking at different names. And do you know the myth of Pandora?
Yeah.
Okay, vaguely. And so for those of you who don't know, Pandora was given a box by Zeus and told never, ever open this box. But of course she was curious, and so one day she opened up the lid a little bit, and all the emotions and chaos and disease and turmoil came into the world. And so she realized what was happening. She shut the lid, and hope remained in the box. And so the optimists say, well, I'll start with the pessimists. Let's go with the dark side first. The pessimists believe that the world is hopeless now because Pandora trapped hope in the box and there's all this chaos in the world. And the optimists say that the reason that hope stayed in the box is because no matter what happens to you, hope will always be close to you. And so it stayed close for Pandora. We thought, well, that's an interesting story. And there's really so many different stories and myths and cultures in the world that will all come from a different spot and a different background, and we'll see the world differently. And so what do you do with that? What do you do with all of those emotions that you have? And for Bonnie and I, we write poetry. That's just what comes naturally to us, and that's the Pandora's part of the name, is the self-expression through all the emotions.
Right.
And the collective part is that feeling of empowerment you get when you start to connect with the community and do all these wonderful things. Like the summer festival that Bonnie started, we realized there's about 30 ongoing open mics for literary events and readings around town, and why not get them together? And so Bonnie contacted everybody and said, let's show this to the community and let's put it out there and let them know, hey, this is what's going on. You have all these resources available to you. So that's the collective part of her name.
Great. And why do you guys feel that self-expression is so important?
Oh, for so many reasons. It is a tool that you can use, first of all, to get out how you're feeling, how to deal with what happens in the world, mm-hmm. how to explain what happens in the world. And it's important also to make people aware of what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And to be right there in people's faces in a way.
Yeah.
And it changes the way you see things. Sometimes if you hear something very inspiring, I always think back of this one boy that we gave a scholarship to, and he was 12 at the time. He did some metaphors for us on nature, and he said that the wind is the earth's first and last breath, and clouds are heaven's thinking moments, and flowers are nature's makeup. And I thought, oh, like I'll always think when I see a flower, I think, oh, it's nature's makeup. So it really can affect the way you see the world. It's wonderful.
Right, and I noticed like on your website you have listings for different like cinema and plays and everything that are going on, and that's pretty much what I do with my show, is do listings and everything like that. So what do you think is important? Like there's self-expression, but then there's also going and checking out other things. So
yes. Well, that actually ties into something new that we're starting, because when Bonnie started Twisted Poets a long time ago, there weren't as many places to read your writing and to do that. Now there's so many of them that we thought we need to see more of the community rather than just be stagnant with our own event, because we had four stagnant events. And we thought, why not explore all of the arts and give people an opportunity to be with a group? And so we have Voices Vancouver, which is starting in 2008, possibly a bit sooner. And we're just going to pick a venue, whether it's the art gallery, going to see a band, going to an open mic to read poetry, and whoever wants to come, Pandora's members can come, and we'll go as a group and read together or do some writing to the paintings on the wall and really incorporate all of the arts.
And what do you think is different sort of about writing in particular as a mode of self-expression? Do you think it's unique, or do you think they're all sort of equal?
I think what is particularly unique about writing is it's something you do in isolation. A lot of the other arts, you can share in different ways,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of writers are totally isolated, and I think that's why community is so important for writers, to get mm-hmm. them out there and have a sense of community and know they're not alone in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess another thing is with writing, it's your own always, whereas with a lot of things, if you're in theater, you're putting on another person's play, mm-hmm. so it's a different, you can't express yourself as much.
Or in a band as well, you're collaborating. But yeah, it's just, they're all ways of interpreting the world, which is beautiful, and so we, you know, you see the benefits, equal benefits to all of them, and just people have to find what really clicks for them, what gives them that feeling of gratification, like, wow, mm-hmm. this, you know, makes a difference to me.
And how about spoken word poetry versus written poetry? Like, how different are the two of them?
I would say they're considerably different.
Yeah.
And I think they're both valid
mm-hmm.
for what they do. I just think they are very different.
And the spoken word poem, I guess, is set out from the beginning, written in a different way than the poem that you know is going to be written down.
It's a different focus. I think that page poetry tends to be an expression of a moment or a time or something that you want to get across. It can be very personal or it can be meant to be shared, where spoken word is always meant to be shared. It's meant to be shared with mm-hmm. a direct audience that's going to be there, that's going to be hearing it at that moment. It's more interactive.
And also, I think it depends if you're talking particularly about slam. That has a particular style.
Right.
And it's meant as a competitive thing. So it is totally different. I mean, when you're writing, when you're talking about page poetry, you're still keeping an audience in mind, but it's a different sort of thing. You don't
mm-hmm. And there's no time restrictions where if you were competing in the poetry slam, you have a certain amount of time that your poem could be. So it is different. Right, and in the community, there are groups that, such a variety. There's the World Poetry, which reads in different languages at the downtown library, and you'll hear somebody read in Greek and then have it translated in English. You'll hear somebody read in Punjabi and translated in English. It's fabulous. And that's, you know, very multicultural. Then you'll go to a writer's group that has three or four people, mic-less, just sharing their work and doing some exercises. Then you'll go to another one that's a competition style, and like there's just such a great degree of variety.
The written has the element of the spacing as well, and then the spoken, you have to worry about the sound of things.
Exactly.
I mean, always the sound, I guess, is important in written poetry as well. But
you're right. The word the white is on the page makes such a difference for
and your
a page
own performance
poet.
Becomes important, I suppose, as well in the spoken word. So to make sure you have the guts to go perform it properly.
Yes,
that's right.
Absolutely.
Did one of you wanted to read one of your poems for us today? Or?
Sure. We'll let Bonnie start.
Because
sure.
She always makes me start.
I do.
This is called The Night Air Number One. I am wrestling with meaning, what it is to take someone's heart and know, just know that they will be there as long as you can whisper a single syllable into the night air. That the papaya I bought came from where it said on the grocer's sign and was ripened just in time for Easter morning without chemical intervention, or that sometime in the night my hair rises in dreadlocks, a Medusa's ghost, untamed, wild, breaking convention. These are the things that make me pace at 2 a.m. from the kitchen to the hall and back a million and a half times. How is it that Hepburn found Tracy, but I can't find you? And that you could never eat enough apple seeds to kill you, but Adam's single bite threw us all out of paradise? There are too many questions. Where do the clouds go when we aren't looking? I look there for the answers, but clouds disappear, move on, and I'm left here sitting at my computer, whispering into the night air, and I know you can't hear.
Great, thank you very much. Do you
want to
share one as well, Marcy?
Sure. This one is called Orange Flowers. When our souls stretch, they become flat, like caterpillars' bodies edging through pure soil. When this happens, you could swear that for just a moment, a flame is sparked in our igloo hearts. We stretch like this on Sundays or lazy afternoons, let the sawdust of a week's work fall from our shoulders. We feel for each other's curves, mountains, rivers, horizons. I watch for the flowers to bloom in your eyes. The last bouquet you gave me just a few weeks ago, you bought from the man that stands at the corner of Pacific and Quebec. His outstretched pleas reached you. His body was shadowed by GM Place, where concrete and fans applaud million-dollar salaries that parade on skates and hold microphones while he stands homeless with flowers. The bouquet was so similar to the one you gave me on our first date, with your fingers and palm comforting tiny green stems. No paper, just your caress that I was soon to love. Now I take your hand, hold it over our hearts, try to stretch away the cold of the city, the crippling effects of stress, doubts, exhaustion. Yet we feel no pain compared to the toughness of Pacific and Quebec, where hardly anyone cares, but you did, bringing me a touch of orange flowers.
That's terrific. Thanks. Do either of you, just on that note, to find inspiration about living in Vancouver specifically?
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
Oh, yeah, there's so much, you know, going on in Vancouver. And before I got involved in the writing community, I didn't have a clue at how much there is. And, you know, people complain, oh, it's so boring, there's nothing to do. And once you tap in and realize there's a lot happening, there's a lot of amazing people. And we've met so many talented individuals, and it's inspiring.
And also, I mean, just how can you live somewhere that is so beautiful, but also there's so much that isn't beautiful at the same time?
And so much diversity of the beauty to the pain and the diversity in people and lifestyles. It's wonderful.
What do you guys think what's the benefit of the group in writing, to sit down and work together on things? I know that's something you do a lot.
I think keeping you going, inspiration, writing to subjects you normally wouldn't. There's a lot of benefits. Bonnie, I'll let you add some.
Yeah, I think just the collective energy, being in a room with a bunch mm-hmm. of people who are all writers, working together, there's just nothing like it.
Do you tend to just listen to each other, or do you offer editing suggestions sort of thing?
It depends on what we're doing.
Right.
No.
Okay.
With WordWhips, which we host, we give people writing prompts, and we give them 10 minutes to write to it, and then they can share if they want. We don't do critiquing there.
Right.
But, sometimes
10 minutes is harsh. I can't make it perfect, right?
But sometimes we will offer, we had somebody we did a class with through Pandora's. We asked him to come in and do a workshop, and we had people send him stuff, and then he critiqued it, and then we all met.
Right.
So it depends what we're doing.
And with private writing groups, Bonnie and I will meet with some friends, and we will actually really workshop and look at punctuation and look at line breaks and just the whole body, the piece of work, and maybe a combination of poems together if we're thinking about submitting to a press, that is sort of the next step beyond the inspiration to the editing.
I know when I write, I always find if it'll look one way on a page, and if someone else reads it, they read it a certain way that doesn't sound right at all, and I meant it completely differently, and I guess you have to work it out to
the line
make
breaks.
Sure you know how other people are going to read it, and that's the way you want it to be, right? So
yes.
That probably helps to bounce it off each other. That's great. What advice do you guys have for aspiring writers?
Keep going.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Keep writing and find a safe spot. Find somebody you trust to share your work with, and then just keep listening to other people. Read and go out to open mics and be open to things.
The first time I ever read in public, I read so fast and my knees were just
shaking.
And the people told me, you have to read that again. We didn't understand a single word you just said.
No.
So just, and now it doesn't bother me to get up anywhere and read. So you just persevere and just keep going.
Yeah. That's terrific. I just wanted to ask you guys finally if there's any events that are coming up in the next little bit. People can keep their eyes open.
There are so many. If you go to our website, pandorascollective.com, you will go to our event listings, and there are tons and tons. We don't just list our own events. We list events through the community, and also you can sign up for our e-news for all the events that happen too quickly or with short notice, and we can't put them on our website. Bonnie sends them out about twice a week. So if you want to find out what's happening, just go to our website, contact Bonnie, and she'll put you on the listserv.
Great. Okay, thank you very much, you guys.
Thank
you. Anything else you want to say?
I was just going to say, as far as our events go, we host WordWhips, as I said, and that will be this Wednesday. So the first Wednesday of the month, and it's on our website. So.
Perfect. There you go.
Great. Thanks.
Okay, thanks very much. All right, so once again, that was Cedar Carboni and Bonnie Niche from the group Pandora's Collective, and some great events, it sounds like, that are coming up, so you can always go to their website and check those out. And actually, if you're interested in writing and in theater, you probably want to tune in next week to Arts Express, because we're going to be doing a radio play, which was chosen out of submissions from the UBC Creative Writing Department in a class that does radio drama. So we're going to be showing a little bit of the writing talent here at UBC, and this play actually deals with First Nations issues, the radio play, which is interesting because we're also going to be talking about First Nations issues today with the Ecstasy of Rita Jo, as well as actually with the On Edge reading series, which I'm about to let you know about in listings. So first up in literary events, we're going to talk about Yann Martell. The man, Booker Prize winning author, gives a presentation about the new illustrated edition of his novel, The Life of Pi. That is tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Frederick Wood Theater here at UBC. So if you're on campus, you might as well stroll over and check that one out. The other one which I mentioned mentioned just now was the On Edge Reading Series. The On Edge Reading Series and the Asian Canadian Studies Society present readings by Connie Fifth and Salome Valiano, followed by a discussion of writing, alliance building between First Nations and Asian communities, and actions on violence against women, themes that are also represented in The Ecstasy of Rita Joe, as I'll explain later on, and also in the play I'm going to talk about, the play I'm going to be presenting next week on Arts Express. Now, that On Edge Reading Series is December 6th at 7 p.m. at the Emily Carr Institute. A couple things you also want to keep your eyes out for. In galleries, there's A Cast of Shadows, Intaglio Prints by Jude Graybell. That's at the Burnaby Art Gallery until January 13th. Sorry about that. And also Mark Lewis, Modern Time, 10 works by the London-based Canadian filmmaker. That's at the Vancouver Art Gallery until January 6th. Now, as I promised, I'm going to give a review right now of the play Rita Joe, which I had a chance to check out at the Firehall Arts Centre on Cordova. The play followed a young Aboriginal woman who leaves the reserve to travel to the big city. Although it is hard to tell, the city could easily be Vancouver. Once the woman arrives, she is forced to deal with an immediate clash of cultures. She cannot, like many of her friends, find or hold a good job, and eventually falls into crime and prostitution. From there, she is subjected to a justice system that does not understand her and does not make any attempt to. Rather, the judge relies strongly on his sense of white Canadian culture, believing that it has worked hard for its place of supremacy and does not see why the First Nations people have not managed to completely integrate themselves into this system. Although this judge clearly pities Rita Joe, he does not show her or her people respect. Rita's friend Jamie Paul picks up on this attitude and begins to rebel against even the charity workers who are attempting to help the First Nations in the city. He takes a more uncompromising position, arguing that the First Nations should not be pushed out of the societal structure and then pitied by that same society. Rather, they should be respected and given what they deserve. If not, they will take it. Although this is a bit of a harsh attitude, the events in the play are so frustrating and unjust that one can easily understand Jamie Paul's feelings. He sees many other Aboriginals as weak, thinking that their proud acceptance of abuse is only a way of pandering to white supremacy. Of Rita's father, he says, he's the kind of Indian the white man likes. He stands there and looks wise. The play by George Riga has a real important place in the history of modern Canadian theater, and it actually debuted back in 1967 at the Vancouver Playhouse. According to the Canadian Theater Encyclopedia, which calls the play seminal in the history of Canadian theater, it is not great for what it is as much as it is great for what it promises and what it offers the imaginative creative team. Flashes of dramatic brilliance and also the historical aspect of the work's timing. This was one of the first works about Native Canadians mounted on a stage and taken seriously. So obviously this play has a real strong historical impact, and in my opinion it offered a glimpse into First Nations culture and the struggles going on. The most fascinating aspect was the fact that the play, written in 1967, as I mentioned, completely applies today. In fact, until afterwards, I believe the play was set in recent times. In some ways, this makes the message even more effective, as one sees to what extent nothing has really changed, especially in light of the situation on the Downtown East Side and the Picton trial. Additionally, it was interesting that it was being staged at the Firehall Arts Centre, only a block or two from Main and Hastings. Although this theoretically offers the community an opportunity to explore its own issues, most viewers when I went were likely rich people who had driven over from the West Side, like myself. Yet another reflection of the power structure in our supposedly tolerant and multicultural city. Something also dealt with in Cedar Carboni's poem about Pacific and Quebec, appropriately enough. In this sense, the play and its production itself pose many questions about the historical, political, and cultural situation in Canada. I also felt it was exceptional as a piece of theater, with strong acting and an interesting set design. A live vocalist and guitarist appeared on stage, narrating the events through song and adding yet another powerful dimension to the production. Once again, that show is till December 8th at the Firehall Arts Centre with Pay What You Can Days on Wednesdays. So that's everything for Arts Express here today. Make sure you tune in next week. As I mentioned, we're going to be showing that radio play, and we're also going to be having a review of the Arts Centre production of It's a Wonderful Life, and I'm hopefully going to be checking out the movie It's a Wonderful Life tonight to do a little bit of a cross-comparison there. Now, before we move on to Reel, the movie review show with Robert Waldman, I'm just going to play a little bit of music here for you all. I thought I'd try to find something First Nations to reflect the themes that we were talking about today with The Ecstasy of Rita Joe. And so this is something from a singer-songwriter named Violet Natauhau. It's from a CD called Wind of the North, and this song is called Wee Whoop So. It's in Cree, and apparently the English title of the song is Encouraging Song to Swing the Babies Again. And it seems to deal, from my perspective of the translation, about grandchildren and grandparents. So here's a little bit of First Nations music for you all, something you probably haven't heard before, from Violet Natauhau. Now stay tuned for Reel to Reel, and tune in next week for Arts Express.
Nusesem, nusesem, nusesem. Nipahi kwa wee piso Kwape ma waki musumak Kwape ma waki musumak No se sé.